Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Well, we certainly hope all these draft picks are who we thought they were. I am your Next Fan Up host. I'm the Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I am joined here by a couple other superfans. We're going to be breaking down the full draft now. I mean, we had the crew did a great job of going through and reacting to the first round on Friday. We're going to be talking about rounds 2 through 7, but a bit more broadly. You know, obviously, we're not going to go pick by pick throughout the whole darn thing. But to really dig into some of the interesting themes that we've seen, some of the teams that we did that we think did extremely well in the draft, and some teams that really made some pretty odd moves this year. But without further ado, let me introduce you to our Saints superfan, Chris. He's a regular on the weekend show. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, Nick. How about yourself?
Doing just fine. And we're also joined here by usually a midweek regular for us, our favorite Scottish Redskins fan, Neil. What's up, Neil?
Hey, Nick. I'm doing fine. I've had a great day today. I've been doing my best to hack into Seahawks Justin's Twitter account, and I've just finally managed to insert those salacious and rather compromising pictures that you sent me. I think one of them included a sheep, another one included a goat, and I'm not going any further.
Well, that would seem to be your Highland expertise in terms of that sort of blackmail. But moving on, you know, we have a lot to talk about here. But the first thing I just wanted to get into are just sort of, you know, some of the general themes that you guys saw in terms of, you know, it seems like the philosophy of drafting and the science or art of drafting, as it were, changes every year. And you know, there's a variety of interesting things you see teams doing, and in terms of, you see the conventional wisdom shifting in different directions. We had spark scores come up in recent years that seem to be driving a lot of the way teams look at stuff. Obviously, we now have the Cleveland Browns that have been totally taken over by the analytics folks. I have my thoughts about how the Chiefs made some interesting picks here. But another thing you just have to point out is it's interesting now, who are the powerhouse colleges that are producing all of these athletes? And Ohio State had a really remarkable crop of players coming in here. They had 2 picks in the first 4 picks, which was the first time since Oklahoma in 2010. They set a new record for the most picks in the first 3 rounds, with 10 players drafted in the first 3 rounds. And they had at least 1 player from every major position group selected. So, I mean, they were fielding practically an NFL team last year, which is pretty amazing. The other colleges of note were Clemson had 9 players drafted, UCLA had 8, and Alabama, Florida, and Notre Dame each had 7. But what did you guys see?
Well, first of all, I think I saw, like you say, Ohio State, 12 picks in the first 139 picks. Is that a record, Nick? I mean, it's really, it's outstanding. And of course, the add-on to that is, how come Ohio State didn't actually win the national championship?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the Ohio State picks stem from Urban Meyer seems to have a personal relationship with a lot of NFL coaches. So they seem to, I know Sean Payton talks about it all the time, and I had a deal with taking 2 of them this year as a Wolverines fan. But, you know, Sean Payton always refers to Urban Meyer and the great relationship he has with them and how he feels like he can trust them.
Also, the Alabama players, I mean, they started to drop a little bit and fall into the second and third rounds. Is that because the Alabama players are perhaps overworked in college, coming out a bit tired, a bit injured? A lot of tread on the tires. A lot of tread taken off.
Well, we sort of had this discussion a few weeks back when we were going through Chris's big board, and I think there's definitely something to that. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of Alabama players that either have had injury problems or sort of gotten worn down once they got to the league. And also, I think, I mean, the Chiefs have picked a few players here and there off of Alabama squads on the defensive side, a safety and a middle linebacker over the years. And both of them were extremely unremarkable. And, you know, of course, that's a small percentage of the overall picks and things like that. But, you know, I think there's really something to the idea that, you know, Nick Saban is I think by far the best coach in at the college level, and he coaches these guys and with using a lot of NFL, you know, methods and things like that. And so I think teams look at Alabama and they see a team that it's full of players that may have already reached their full potential. And so if this guy is, you know, already playing at an NFL level there in college, then okay, yeah, then let's pick him. But if you think this is as good as he's going to be, well, then maybe he's not a first round pick. Maybe he's really more of a second or a third. And we saw a whole bunch of Alabama players go in that range, but we didn't see see a whole lot, if any, actually, in the first round.
One of the themes that struck me going into the draft has been months and months of hype over the defensive line depth and the number of defensive tackles, especially that were going to be going in the opening round. I think sometimes you're reading up to 8, 9, 10 in the first round, and that kind of fell away, and a lot of the bigger names just kept dropping and dropping. Of course, there's two Alabama players there in Jaren Reed and Ashawn Robinson. They both fell quite a bit, and that was a surprising thing for me. The team just kept passing up on them.
Yeah, I noticed that myself, and the other position that I thought was very similar in that was offensive guard. There were, I know towards the end of the draft, Lanell Alexander, Christian Westerman from Arizona, those kids fell 2, 3, 4, 5 rounds later than they were projected to go. And then you had players Turner, the kid from North Carolina who went undrafted. And then center, Jake Allen. The fact he went undrafted still amazes me. I thought he was the second best center in the country from the film that I watched. So, now there were a lot of positions to where players fell and he just couldn't, you know, I watched Hyper and Mache try to make heads or tails of players like Billy, that they couldn't figure it out themselves.
I was just going to ask Chris, do you think that's, it seemed to be quite a startling thing this year. It stood out that so many players who were in the sort of draft buzz and all the mocks for the last couple of months did drop. Is there something going on there in terms of teams just not giving up the information they used to give up to the media folk? It seemed quite startling. I mean, Andrew Billings was another one who seemed to just keep dropping. I think he went in the fourth round in the end. Bit of an error there somewhere along the line.
I think there's a couple things to factor. I mean, the media will admit they're always about a week or two behind what the NFL execs are. So if something gets found out, you know, like they started late on saying Billings had a knee issue and that there might be some character concerns as well. Those things just came to light the last couple of days before the draft. So I think it's a combination of that and I follow the Saints more than I follow any other team with their draft prep. The Saints, the past 2 years in the department, have just openly lied about who they liked. And I'd actually be curious to see, guys, if there was any, you know, if that swung out against it or Washington. You know, last year it was Bryce Petty. Sean Payton had come out and said Bryce Petty had the most accurate arm he had ever seen in the draft process. And then took Jarrett Grayson in the third round while Petty went in the fourth or fifth. This year, they love Paxton Lynch. Paxton Lynch is the greatest quarterback they've ever seen. Until they take Sheldon Rankins at 12. So, I'm curious with you guys, do you notice any kind of trend where the smoke screens were laid on pretty thick and almost laughable from your end?
Well, I think there's always the smoke screens, but I think it would be really interesting to see really what's going on in a lot of these war rooms and just get a sense of a large percentage of them to see. Because the thing is that all the GMs are going to lie a bunch before the draft. They're going to lie a bunch after the draft. They're always going to say that whoever they picked was the top guy on their board. But the reason why I think we saw, for instance, a bunch of these D linemen drop is because although it was an extremely deep draft at that position, I don't know how many teams felt like they really had D-line as one of their top needs. And the other thing is when there's just that many talented guys, then, you know, you end up in a situation where you have like 15 D-linemen on your board that are ahead of the next position, but we really need that position. And so, you know, we'll keep drafting for some of these other, you know, weaker areas, knowing that no matter what, we're going to be able to pick up one of these 15 great D linemen. And so you saw a bunch of them leave the first round, and they all sort of ended up scattered all over the mid rounds. I think that had an effect. And, you know, when it comes to the other stuff, we also just never know what the moves the different teams tried to make. Paxton Lynch's agent has come out since the draft and said a number of teams were trying to draft to a position to grab him. Apparently the Chiefs were one of them. But it was Denver that moved up, you know, high enough and far enough and quick enough to be able to nab him where they did. So, you know, you never really know. The other thing I wonder about, and this is something I'd really like to ask a guy like Andrew Brandt, a friend of the podcast, if, you know, is what role the agents play in terms of giving intelligence to different teams on what the other teams think about guys. Because if you think about it, like, no, none of these GMs are saying anything openly, and half of what they're saying are outright lies. And yet you'll see teams move very confidently to trade up in a round, knowing they have to get in front of this team because they know this team really likes a guy. How do they actually know that? I mean, they're making sometimes big trades and really, you know, critical decisions to do that. I mean, but a lot of these guys share the same agents, like their coaches with some of these players and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I'm sure the agents can tell them, like, well, we know that, you know, the Buccaneers really love this guy. And so if you want them, I would suggest moving up. You know, I really wonder how all of this intrigue, this backdoor spying and stuff really works. It would be great to, you know, just to be in one of those rooms, really.
Well, I will tell you, for example, in this draft in particular, the defensive tackle the Saints had drafted from Canada had kind of slipped up a bit and said that he was on the phone with Green Bay. Green Bay was telling him that he was going to be their next pick. And then all of a sudden, New Orleans traded up the draft. It has then come to light that Sean Payton and this kid share the same agent. So the belief is, as Green Bay called to announce their pick, the agent called Sean Payton and said, you know, if you want the kid, now's the time to get him. So the Saints went from mid-fifth to early fourth to grab him. So there's definitely some kind of collusion throughout it. And I thought that was interesting. And with you, I'm curious how more often that does happen.
Didn't we also see a similar situation with Laramie Tunsil? Didn't he have the same agent as Adam Gase, the Miami head coach, and somebody else there in the organization?
You know what? I do believe I read something like that. So, So the agent may have been able to smooth talk Gase because they have a personal relationship.
All right, well, good stuff. Well, let's move on to, you know, some of the teams in particular. We saw teams, you know, like we've been saying, they were moving all over the place. And it's interesting. Again, it's one of those reasons why I love doing the Super Mock Draft, is it just gives you, because I think the average fan, they've seen enough mock drafts to know the names at like the first couple of rounds. But when you actually have to go through the exercise of picking for your team through seven rounds, you really have to research a ton of guys. You have a sense of where these guys might go all over the place. And, you know, and we didn't finish the last two, but, you know, we started a second and a third mock draft. So we've, as sort of make-believe GMs, we've gone through this a few times now. And so we have a sense of where, you know, an alternate universe where some of these guys might have gone, even in the mid rounds. And so with all of that in mind, Chris, who do you think had a particularly good draft?
I like what Baltimore did. I mean, as always, but not necessarily, not because of their first round or their second round. Their fourth round was, so they ended up with three or four guys that not only I think will make the team, but will contribute early on. I'm trying to find my list here. I believe they were the ones that had Willie Henry in the fourth, the running back from Louisiana Tech, Dixon. Those are two guys that will come in and help right away and fill needs for them as well. Matt Judon, I think, is going to be a really good pass rusher in this league. They got him out of the D2 school, although I believe he was a fifth-round pick. But either way, to get that much value that late is impressive, and it's what we see them do every year. It's becoming a trend and almost a boring answer, but it's true. Every year, Baltimore finds a way to come in and they have a great draft, and every year Cleveland steps in and does the complete opposite. So I don't know what who were you impressed by, Neil?
Well, I was certainly impressed by Jacksonville. I think they were when I did my grades, they were the ones who graded out as the highest team. And I'm talking away here because I'm also struggling just to read through all my papers to find my notes on the JAG, which I've now found. I really liked the fact that they got an absolute steal in Miles Jack. He's one of those players I have my fingers crossed for. I hope it all works out with his knee. And if it does work, it's getting him at the top of the second round. Wow, that could be I think it's a pick. There was Jalen Smith and Miles Jack, and I think Jack seems to be the one who's most ready to play. We're hoping that he's not going to need the microfracture surgery, whereas Jalen Smith looks, I would put him down as a bit of a reach for Dallas. But anyway, Jacksonville, yeah, I love Miles Jack there, number 36. Jalen Ramsey, I think, is the best player in this draft. I think over time we'll see that. He was just excellent. But getting him at number 5, I mean, that is, to get the best player at number 5, that is a huge steal. And they got, and I'm going to go for it now. I'm going to go for Yannick Ngakoue, who I think I've pronounced terribly, never mind. He looks like an excellent addition. And I like Sheldon Day. I mean, he dropped to 103 overall. He's going to come in there and he's going to contribute to them. I just love it. Defense to defense, defense, defense. And, after the work they've done on the offense, Jacksonville, I think, are ready to purr.
Well, and they got Brandon Allen, the quarterback, in the 6th round, which I thought was really good value as well. And just on Miles Jack, you know, that was the other, you know, we had the big storyline and the surprising fall, you know, was Laremy Tunsil, obviously, in the 1st round. Well, Miles Jack was basically that story in the 2nd round, even though, I mean, he fell out of the 1st round, so everybody knew he was available there. And it was really just a big open question in terms of where he was going to end up. This is another one of those things where you never know who's lying, who's telling the truth. But I do think it's noteworthy that when our GM, John Dorsey, was asked after round one what surprised him most about the 1st round and how it went, he said, like, I'm really just stunned that Miles Jack is still on the board. And remember, the Chiefs had traded back. They traded out of the 1st round. And so Jacksonville, knowing it, I guess hearing that comment, they traded directly in front of the Chiefs to draft Miles Jack. Now, I don't know whether Dorsey was telling the truth or, you know, if he wanted somehow someone to trade up to them or in front of them to get the guy. But I have a hard time believing that's a total coincidence, like that comment. And then, you know, Jacksonville felt they needed to move up in front of us to get him. But yeah, I mean, so the same thing with Tunsil. We had these sort of late reports that got at least to the media, although I guess the teams have known about it for a while, that that he has a lot of damage on the one knee and that he could require microfracture surgery. But then before the draft picks at least started coming in, Adam Schefter reported that Dr. Andrews, you know, the league's doctor, essentially, by default, he had come out and said that he doesn't think that the Jack would ever need, well, at least not now, he doesn't need microfracture surgery and probably would play just fine. And it's like, I mean, if I'm Jack and his agents, I wish Andrews wouldn't have sat on his hands and would have put out something, you know, a day earlier. But it did seem like suddenly there was, you know, some sign that the Jack would be on the clear, at least relatively safe to draft. And he didn't last too long in the 2nd round once that went out there.
One of the things that I found interesting is with Miles Jack, Adam Schefter had posted a video. I don't know if you guys had saw this on Twitter, or Miles Jack posted, I'm sure, on Twitter, and then Schefter had retweeted it, of Miles Jack dunking a basketball that morning. Did you guys see that at all?
Yeah, saw that. Yeah.
Was that not the safest, most gentle dunk you've ever seen in your life? It seemed like Miles Jack was being very cautious. And I think that's a concern, because we didn't see him run. And then he does this to prove a point. We know this kid is just an absolute blue-chip athlete. And that was as WNBA of a dunk as I think I've ever seen. So I think there's still something that's not quite right with that knee. I hope he's okay. I'd love to see Jacksonville still this division. But there's something more going on than even what we got to see this weekend.
Well, my favorite team in terms of just how they attacked, at least how they added value and great fits, at the top of the draft was Buffalo. I mean, they got Shaq Lawson at pick number 19. I mean, he's I can't wait to see how Rex uses him. He's going to be a great Rex Ryan guy. Then they get Reggie Ragland in the second, who really fell. He's another one of those big fallers from Alabama. But, and I can kind of see why. I mean, I think teams are concerned that he's not a three-down player. But, again, I trust Rex to be able to figure out a way to use this guy. And yeah. And then they get Adolphus Washington out of Ohio State, the D-tackle in round three. And so, like, they've gotten three really, really strong defensive guys, and you know that Rex has a plan for them. And then the fourth round, they get Cardale Jones, who, I mean, obviously no one expects him to be, you know, the day one starter. But, I mean, I think he's a legitimate prospect to add to their uncertain QB situation. So, you know, I don't know. I was really impressed with Buffalo, and they're the sort of team that and Rex Ryan's teams tend to be the ones that make the really head scratching moves. But this was a solid draft by them. They also grabbed wide receiver Colby Listonby in the sixth, really fast guy, and you know I think in their offense alongside Sammy Watkins, you're gonna have there's one more dude you can have, you know, streaking down the field, which is gonna force the defense to spread out. I thought they did a good job too.
I'm going to say real quick, something to remember about Ragland is David Harris was not a three-down linebacker coming out of college either. And Rex Ryan has gotten a lot out of him over the years at New York. So Ragland could be an absolute steal for them in the second.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's probably a next fan-up podcast down the line which has to discuss this thing which really annoys me, is this everybody's got to be a three-down player. I really don't like that anymore. And we should talk about that at some point. The player I like also for Buffalo was Jonathan Williams, the running back from Arkansas. Got him in the fifth round. I think he's somebody who can come in also and contribute right away. So, yeah, he was on my list too, Nick. Can I throw another one in there?
Absolutely.
I would. It might be a bit controversial, but I actually liked Cleveland's draft. I like the fact, I love the fact that they got 14 picks, even though five of them may have been wide receivers. Yeah, so what? 14 picks. I think that's great. Really good chance for them to start developing the depth on the roster. There wasn't any particular players there that I like. I mean, Coleman, I think, is a good player, and I think he'll fit in well. But just the fact that they managed to get so many picks in there to start developing the depth on the roster was excellent. So I think, yeah, a bit of kudos to Cleveland there.
What about you, Chris? Well, actually, let's move on to the teams we're gonna now dump on. But yeah, let's toss it to you, Chris. What was a team that you thought did not do well in this draft?
You know, honestly, I think it's a tie between Cleveland and Atlanta. We'll make Atlanta a 1B. I think they had a decent draft without a first round pick. I think everybody was about a round ahead where they should have been. But with Cleveland, Corey Coleman, you know, Neil and I, you and I have actually gone back and forth about where we stand with Coleman. I think he's a bit overrated. But I see the fit in Cleveland. I see the need. But Agba, I don't think, is a 3-4 linebacker or D-end. I think he fits better in a 4-3. Nassib, I think he can be a decent 3-4 end. But I think he's a bit overhyped as well. It's five wide receivers. That's the part that I can't wrap my head around. You have so many holes, and for that to be the position that you attack so hard, surprised me. It wasn't a complete loss. I mean, I like Higgins. I like, Schobert out of Wisconsin. I thought it was good value in the fourth round. Peyton, I think, is a decent wide receiver. But, dear God, I mean, you – You really don't have a secondary. You really don't have anything right now if you're Cleveland. So to put that much into one position, I found very surprising.
I think for me, the taking a wide receiver in the first round was fine. I think somebody mentioned it on the podcast at the weekend. They're probably right to take a wide receiver, but probably took the wrong one in this instance. Maybe Treadwell would have been a better pick for them. And in terms of taking five wide receivers, I think they're probably just buying lottery tickets, aren't they? Just getting as many tickets as they can and hoping that somebody can come in there and help Gary Barnage.
Would Gary Barnage is your top guy?
Yeah.
We're in trouble. We're in trouble.
Oh, well, that's why it's called the Factory of Sadness. But I agree with you, Chris, on the Falcons. They were my pick for the worst as well. And I mean, as you mentioned, I think both their top two picks went a full round ahead of where anybody else had them on their boards. And there weren't many. The only other pick that was like a total head scratcher in the first round was Eli Apple, I think, going to the Giants at number 10 overall. But like both of their first. You know, their first two picks in rounds one and two, they were the only ones where I felt like there was sort of this collective response in both the media and us and like the teams was like, okay, yeah, go ahead. But what's interesting is that I think our Falcon superfan had a better draft in the superfan super mock. Both he and the real team picked a tight end Austin Hooper in the third round, which I think makes sense for them. Probably the second best tight end in the draft, and they need something at that position. They haven't had anything since Gonzo left. But yeah, I mean, getting Keanu Neal in the first round, who's really probably a second round safety, although the safeties really stayed on the board. I mean, Von Bell didn't go to the end of the second round. He might not have gone until somewhere in the third. And yeah, whereas you know, Falcons, Tim, he got Darren Lee in the first round, and he got Keanu Neal in the second. So yeah, not my favorite.
I'm not crazy ecstatic about what the Broncos did, though. I do think they found good value with McGovern and a fifth. Their draft was just kind of, it was average, but then you have to have Paxton Lynch and they're not, this makes it to where they have to start Mark Sanchez. And we've been harping on this and joking about this all off season. And I think we've been having fun with it because we always assumed there'd be a different option. Well, when you stay up on Lynch, it's no longer a joke. You're stuck with Mark Sanchez now. So that I found concerning. I don't like project quarterbacks in the first, and I like Paxton Lynch, but this one, I fear they're going to put him out there sooner than they should. And two, you know, this is all you got. Maybe they should have went with a quarterback later. You know, Connor Cook fell very far. Somebody who might be considered a little more pro-ready so they can have that buffer until Lynch is ready to take over in a year or two.
Well, Lewis, our Denver superfan, he wrote in that he thinks that the whole draft is going to be mainly graded on how Paxton Lynch pans out. He said he would have preferred to see his team replenish its defense with the top picks, but he's overall satisfied with it. I mean, I think they gave up a third for the trade up. And so really Paxton Lynch is your first and third picks. And as everyone seems to think, I mean, he is basically a project who, you know, probably went a full round or two, you know, higher than he probably deserved to, if you're just going on a pure player talent value perspective. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be Lynch and Sanchez and Kaepernick staying put. But that's the thing. I mean, and so I agree with you, Chris. I mean, I think the franchise sort of put themselves in the situation. I know Lewis is, you know, he says he's fairly content, but, you know, you're a Super Bowl contender. You had options in free agency in terms of re-signing guys or signing guys off the street that could help keep your team at a steady level. And now you're in a position where your draft and maybe, you know, your season and seasons to come are going to be dependent upon a project quarterback. And teams that, you know, have to lean on that are teams like the Browns typically. So you've really pushed yourself down far with the way this is managed. Now, look, I mean, maybe Lynch will turn out to be great. And that would be quite unfortunate from my perspective as a Chiefs fan. But, you know, I think they come out of this thing with with pretty much all the same questions unanswered for the team.
That's true. That's true. And but if you look at it from the player's point of view of Paxton Lynch, could he have got a better situation? He's going to a team where they have an all-world defense, and it's going to be pretty much the same next year, I would think. They won a Super Bowl with quarterback play, which was pretty diabolical. He's not stepping into the shoes of a player who's had a great season. And if you think about it, if he's probably got the easiest job in terms of him's Vents and the Goster, they're going to be having a lot more pressure on their shoulders. And I don't think it could have got any better for Paxton Lynch. So good chance he does all right.
I would counter with Dallas. I think if I was Paxton Lynch, I'd rather go to the Cowboys. I think that offensive line, Ezekiel Elliott, and having a veteran quarterback to sit behind for a couple of years, he'd be in a much better spot. I'd be afraid to go to Denver. I think they've lost a lot of talent this offseason. They've got a lot of big free agents next year. And by the time he gets to take over those reins, I think it's going to be a shell of what we're looking at right now. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. This is one of those situations where you can't judge it for 3 or 4 years, but I wish him the best.
You lost me entirely, Chris, when you mentioned that it was better to go to Dallas. I mean, what does that mean? I'm a Washington
fan.
Hurt.
It really hurt to say.
I just didn't understand it.
Well, so let's move on to the team that we think, based on their draft, should now have moved themselves into the playoff discussion. A team that maybe was going to be middling, but based just purely on how well their draft went, they're moving up there. I kind of have a feeling we all picked the same team. So I'm going to talk first to grab all the talking points. We mentioned them already. It's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they already have Fowler coming back, off of his injury last year. He's essentially a freshman this year. He's essentially a rookie. They got Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack. I mean, they're bringing like three top five talents to the field as rookies essentially this year. Plus they got Sheldon Day, which we mentioned before. I think, to tip my hand for a future question is, I think he may be one of the steals of the draft. I mean, at 103rd overall in the fourth round, because the Chiefs picked a Notre Dame cornerback, Kevontae Russell in the third, I've been watching a bunch of Notre Dame tape now. And although Russell made his plays, I mean, the two names that you're constantly hearing if you're watching Notre Dame is Jalen Smith, of course, who, he ended up going to the Cowboys in the second. Unfortunately, he also fell because of his injury. And Sheldon Day. Sheldon Day was the other guy who was just making plays and making tackles all over the place. And he doesn't have the same injury concerns. He fell all the way down to the fourth to the Jaguars. I mean, this is the test. I mean, at this point, the other thing about the Jaguars is they were a really frustrating team for me last year. I've been on the Gus Bradley bandwagon for a while, but then actually watching their games during the season, I was being consistently let down by them. And I actually, towards the end of the season, I sort of got off the Gus Bradley bandwagon. I mean, it's going to be hard not to be on it now with all these picks that are there, they're going to be just a fascinating team going into 2016.
No, that's absolutely it. If you're talking most improved, I think it has to be Jacksonville. If you want to talk about teams that didn't do as much but solidified their team the most, Minnesota. Love what Minnesota was able to do in this draft. It seemed like every move they did was one that was a glaring hole. I've been pretty vocal. I really like Treadwell. He fell to 23 to him. I expect him to fall further. But to get Treadwell and then to get Mackenzie Alexander later, I thought was fantastic. I mean, those are two guys that could step in right away and really help what's already a pretty good team. This might be able to put them over the edge and become a playoff contender year in and year out for that wild card spot.
Well, and they got the German phenomenon as well, Moritz Behringer in the sixth. So
I like the Jags, of course. Yeah, you're spot on there, Nick, and absolutely with you there, Chris, in terms of the Vikings. Really great. The other teams I had on my list were Buffalo. I think we've spoken about them probably enough already. I think this the defensive changes that they're going to make through this draft. It may just push them just over the edge to they were close last year, and I think this might just get them in, although they're in a tough division. And just to be nice to the host, I think Kansas City, I think although they obviously made the playoffs last year, I think they've added depth, which might help them just take that next step in the playoffs. I think I really like the trade with San Francisco to get... they got Garnett, didn't they? The guard, that was the trade. I think that was an excellent... That was a real savvy move by the Kansas City. Really, really top-class stuff there. And the other team, sadly, of course, the Seahawks. I thought the Seahawks improved, and that's really not what we need in the NFC, but... I think they added some good depth there to their roster, like what they did.
Cool. Well, and so what's a team that we thought sort of had an opportunity to greatly improve themselves, but sort of tripped in the draft here, and really didn't improve themselves enough?
Well, you know, I'm gonna go with my team. I'm gonna go with New Orleans. I admittedly maybe was a little too harsh on the first round pick. And a lot of that stems from, and I know being the fans that you are, you got to this yourself. Going into the draft process, it's like Christmas morning. Well, you're looking at, you know, you're going through all the catalogs, you're looking at all these mock drafts. There's really only been two names mocked to the Saints all offseason. And it was A'shaun Robinson, and it was Sheldon Rankins. So when I finally got to open that present, and it's that gift I was told I was getting for 4 months, just kind of bored with it already. You know, Thomas and Bell, I have to put back a lot of bias by not being an Ohio State fan. They're good, but we gave up a lot of assets to get them. You know, Bell is going to be a backup safety who doesn't like to tackle, which tells me he's not going to be that much of an asset on special teams. Thomas, time and time again, I've heard with the analysis with him that he's got all-world talent, but he needs special coaching. And now I've not been able to find what special coaching means in this situation, but I know I don't want it on my team. And then to have to sit there idle this entire time, only to end up with a project from Canada at defensive tackle, which is a position we have spent a lot of resources on this offseason already with the Nick Fairley and Sheldon Rankins pickups. And then a running back in the seventh round who, frankly, probably won't make the roster. The opportunities were there. We walked out of the draft with a huge hole at both guard positions, which in New Orleans is the most important position on the offensive line for them because of Drew Brees' height and how he likes to step up into the pocket. So we had the opportunity. I mean, I know we only had six picks, but there were players there and available that slipped quite a bit for players that they're good players, but maybe we didn't need as much as the other guys. So I'm going to have to, unfortunately, choose my own team on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I liked a lot of the players you guys picked up, but like you, I was surprised to see them moving up for anybody. I mean, for given the whole defensive side of the ball on your team needs work at every level, like you can't be taking picks and ammunition away from your, you know, I was going to mix my metaphors there, but quivers out of your arrow or ammunition out of your magazine. Either way, I mean, the point is, I mean, they came away with only a handful of players on a team that, I mean, I get that they're win now, but they're not two players away from winning now.
Realistically, we got three players that should make this roster. And when that's all you're getting in a draft, and that's good for the Saints. We don't know how to draft, but that's why, since we've won the Super Bowl, we've steadily fallen. And it's because we've missed on free agency, and we've put all of our eggs into free agency. You know, I think since the 2014 draft, we had one player left on our roster. 2013, I don't believe we had any. That wasn't that long ago. You know, these players had not even been in the NFL long enough to hit their 4 to 5 year contracts. So when you constantly miss, you need as many opportunities as possible. And to trade up, Bell's a very talented safety. Bell is not our starting safety. So, you know, one of the few things that we had well last year, when Damian Swan was healthy, he was a very good nickel corner. So we don't really need that safety who can also come down and play nickel corner in some packages. I was confused, and I'm still kind of confused about it. But you know, Sean Payton makes a lot more money than me, and he's had a lot of success in this league. So hopefully, they got this one right.
Yeah, the team I was sort of perplexed by their draft overall, and granted, I mean, they weren't good last year, but I think it was really injuries that held them back. But the San Diego Chargers, I mean, they're a team that I play twice a year, so I sort of know them relatively well in terms of what their needs were. And I mean, I think they're going to be better this year just because there's enough of these guys coming back from injury that they're, I mean, they're not going to be a 3-win team. They're going to be at least vying for 500. And I think they're going to have some surprise wins, I think, this year and be a threat. In a very crowded AFC West. But I mean, one of their biggest problems was they just couldn't protect Phillip Rivers last year. And there were tons of good tackles on all through this draft. And obviously they had their opportunity to pick anybody in this draft that they wanted with third overall. And they go Joey Bosa, which, I mean, it's hard to criticize that pick. I mean, he's one of the most talented guys in the draft. But okay, it's like, all right, well, let's figure out where are you going to hit these needs? Because you're not, you know, again, you are not a team that's just can just go luxury and value pick. So round two, they go tight end Hunter Henry, which, okay, it's the Antonio Gates, you know, heir. I understand you need to get something there. But then they still don't address tackle throughout the entire draft. I mean, they got a center in Max Turk, who is good, but, you know, it's still interior line. They got a guard in the seventh. And then they got a couple of linebackers, and they're pretty good and pretty deep at those positions. And then a punter and a fullback in the sixth. Like they also were one of those teams that was drafting like they had everything they needed. Whereas they basically have no tackles in a division where every other team in the division has two really good pass rushers. It sort of blew my mind because, I mean, there was a game, the claim to fame of the guy who's going to be starting in the place of Justin Houston for however long he's injured is D Ford. And, you know, he had some good games, you know, in spot duty last year. And one of them was he got three sacks against San Diego. But I almost feel like that whole stat should be handicapped because he was playing against, you know, I can't even remember who, you know, who was starting at left tackle there because they were moving them around. But there was literally a play where D Ford, and he has a quick first step, but he had sacked Phillip Rivers before their left tackle got out of his stance on one play. I mean, it was really remarkable. So I was really surprised to see the way that the Chargers attract this draft.
I'd like to, yeah, I agree with you completely. But to take it a step further, do you guys think Joey Bosa fits that defense? He's a great player. I mean, he's already said he's going to play left defensive end. I think he's going to struggle as a 3-4 defensive end.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I assumed that they were going to put him at the outside linebacker spot. I mean, the fact that they're going to try to make him as a three four D end, I really don't like that.
Yeah, with Jalen Ramsey there, you just lost your safety in free agency, and then to take somebody who again, very talented player, but doesn't fit a position for you. It's a third pick. You got to walk out of there with a little bit more of a decisive plan than that. I was surprised. Neil, what's your take on that?
I can't really say in terms of the Chargers because I don't know what percentage of their defensive snaps they play as a 3-4 and what they play as a 4-3 and what they do in terms of having extra defensive backs. So I can't really. I know, for example, Washington are always talked about as a 3-4 team, but they actually only play like 27% of their snaps. With three defensive linemen, a sort of standard nose tackle, so I'm not quite sure. Bosa as a player, yeah, I mean, I'm not. I think anybody who thinks you're going to be getting a 20 sack a season guy, that's misguided. I think somebody's probably going to come in and get 8 or 9 sacks a year. Very, very good in the run game, and I really can't complain with the pick. I think he's like you, Chris. I probably would have taken Ramsey ahead of him, especially with their needed safety. And I certainly agree with their offensive line struggles, but they did have a lot of injuries last year. But I actually quite liked their draft. Sorry, I'm feeling like the odd one out here of you two guys, you two Sunday night guys. But I quite like Hunter Henry and Max Turk if he can stay healthy, which I recognize as a problem for him. I think he's a good player, but yeah, we'll see. I don't think the Chargers are as bad as their record suggests. A bit like the Ravens, you know, they lost a lot of players and went downhill.
Well, I definitely agree there. Well, the next category I wanted to get to in terms of ways to break down this draft is just talking about the real steals.
Whoa, what?
My
category is in.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go for it.
That... The Chris and Nick show. Okay, so just
give us your Scottish category.
I would just like to just for a moment just bash a couple of NFC East rivals. I did not like Dallas there. I think they had an opportunity to get a great player like Ramsey, or I mean if they probably would have taken Bosa. I think there's some footage of them looking a bit shocked when San Diego took Bosa. I think taking Elliott, yeah, great, wonderful. He's going to get some yards and all the rest of it, and probably play a good player for a few years. But I think not to take Ramsey was a huge mistake. And Dallas also didn't address their pass rush concerns. They've got all these guys who are suspended, and they're desperately in need of defensive line help. And they kind of waited to the third and fourth rounds before even looking at that. So I was disappointed. Well, I'm not disappointed with their draft, but I think if I was a Dallas fan, I'd be disappointed. And I'll have to look at the Giants. We mentioned Apple earlier. He's not the player I would have selected there. And I think if you look at the linebacking core, I'll give either of you two guys £10, which is worth about, what, $15, if you can name fairly the top three linebackers in the Giants' defense. It could be you, Chris, and you, Nick, and myself for all many fans would know. Just a bunch of no names.
Jason Pierre-Paul, that's one, right?
He's a defensive end.
Ah, that's 4-3 teams.
So anyway, so I think the Giants missed out there. They waited to the fourth round before they selected a linebacker. And I know that historically they don't take linebackers, but there's a huge, huge need on the team, and they're a chance to really get better there, because there's quite a lot of good linebackers, I think, in this draft.
Well, the one thing I will say in the Giants' defense is that they took Sterling Shepard in the second round, who I really, really like. I think he is going to be jumping right into Victor Cruz's shoes if Victor Cruz is not healthy. And, you know, when was the last time that Victor Cruz was healthy? I mean, either way, I think he's a really, really great intermediate and short-range weapon, which... You know, like you were saying, Neil, I mean, we talk so much about, oh, well, you know, this guy has to be a three-down player, or, you know, the thing is that sub-packages have become so important, and that, you know, there are guys that are not at your quote-unquote premium positions that are sometimes the biggest difference makers on teams, including slot receivers for a lot of teams. And look, I mean, even, you know, the Bengals, they line up A.J. Green in the slot all the time. Totally different type of receiver than Sterling Shepard, but still. Shepard, I thought, was a good pick for them. Although, you know, like you said, Neil, they do need help in a lot of other places. All right, well, am I allowed to move on now, Neil?
Yep, you may do so.
All right.
Thank you.
So we've already talked to, about a lot of these guys, but outside of the ones that we've already mentioned, or even if you want to add on to some of the guys we have mentioned, who do you think was the biggest steal of this draft? I think, you know, Andrew Billings going to the Bengals at the bottom of the fourth is probably one that stands out the biggest to me. And we mentioned Sheldon Day to the Jaguars at 103rd overall at the top of the fourth. But Chris, who did you think was robbed here?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go with both of my Alabama defensive tackles. You know, to get Jahron Reed at 49 is a steal. You know, it's a shock that he fell as far as he did. And to go with the same team, I'm going to go with Seattle as well. I'm going to go with Kenny Lawler as well for Seattle. Seventh round for that kid is impressive.
Yeah, Chris just stole my Alabama guys, but I would certainly add in Kelly, the center, who went to Indianapolis, number 18. I think he's the one guy I've kind of marked down as somebody who could be a perennial Pro Bowl player. He looks terrific, and I just very quietly picked him, didn't they? And he's superb. Like him a lot. And because we've spoken about Miles Jack, and I would stick Laramie Tunsil in there too. Washington has an offensive tackle, left tackle, Trent Williams, who is one of the league's best left tackles. But he's also suffered his own marijuana issues and off-the-field stuff early in his career. But actually, that worked out for us, and he's become a terrific leader and a smashing player for us over the years. So I don't see why that can't be the same for Laramie Tunsil. He didn't fail any drugs tests the last couple of years. So if that works out for Miami, that could be an absolute steal there in the draft, because he is on the field just an outstanding player.
And so who is your biggest head-scratcher here, Neil?
Well, there was a lot of buzz in the draft about a safety, I think he's from Duke, who's now an undrafted free agent. That's Jeremy Cash.
Yeah.
He just fell right off the board, and I just don't know why. Another head-scratcher, I think, would be Dallas taking Jalon Smith in the second round. Terrific player and fantastic. I'm really pleased he got drafted so high. That's great for him, but I don't like teams who have lots of holes taking these sort of risky picks, and story is he's not going to play 2016, so that's a bit of a head-scratcher. And I think as good a player as Josh Garnett may well be for San Francisco, they gave up an awful lot to get him, and that's a bit of a... I wonder, he might still have been there early in the second round.
This is just kind of a moment where we all spend 15 minutes thinking about Tampa trading up for a kicker, right?
That's where I was going.
Hargreaves and Spence, I thought were both great picks for Tampa. And I was like, man, they're really putting on. This would be a great draft for them. And then everybody likes the kicker. Everybody thinks he's the best kicker in the draft. Second round? Really? What? That's the exact moment Tampa realized who they are. Like, oh, we're not any good. We can't have a good draft. We can't do this. That's not how people know us. It was just absolutely amazing. I can't believe I watched that happen.
Oh, yeah, man. Honestly, both of the teams that traded up to the Chiefs spots, they were both just absolutely bizarre picks to me. But the kicker one, I mean, obviously that takes the cake, right? I mean, so they traded away their high fourth rounder. And so effectively, this kicker is, for the Chiefs to move back to the third. So effectively, this kicker was their third and their fourth round pick. How can you express better confidence in your offense than trading up into the second for a kicker? on top of it, you're looking at the first couple of rounds. I mean, obviously, all of these guys, some of them need some more development. Some of them were drafted more on potential, but you're still drafting guys that you want to really be impact players for your team. I mean, unless you really plan on revolutionizing an entire offense that's based around kicking a ton of field goals, I don't really see how, a kicker makes sense at this spot, no matter how good he is. I mean, really. That was quite bizarre. I mean, obviously, I was watching intently because they traded up to the Chiefs, and it was like, all right, and the pick comes in, like, who do they grab? Is it Von Bell or something like that? Yeah, it's, nope, Roberto Aguayo, kicker, Florida State. What? but that's why the draft is fun.
The last time we saw something like this, the Jacksonville Jaguars drafted was Brian Anger in the third round. And I think that's actually what kind of started the whole joke, punters are people too. Tampa signs him this year. The last time we saw this, Jacksonville, he didn't make the cut in Jacksonville and didn't get a second contract. And he ended up in Tampa. So when you have Tampa Bay reliving Jacksonville's mistakes, good God. I mean, it's fantastic. As a Saints fan, I love it. I hope they have the best four kickers in the NFL on their team this year. All four of them. It's amazing.
Well, one pick that wasn't so much of a head-scratcher but was definitely an intriguing one, I wanted to get to an email that we got on it because so our Patriots superfan, Patrick, he wrote in about his draft, also a bit of an opus, and you can find the whole thing on our Facebook page. But anyway, so he wrote a bit about their, I believe it was a third round pick at number 91 overall. They picked quarterback Jacoby Brissett. And so he wrote, okay, here's where things get interesting. This guy wasn't drafted to hold a clipboard for 4 games. You don't spend a top 100 pick to serve as a backup for 4 games. So why did we take him? Fast forward to week 5. Brady, presumably, has sat for the last 4 games with Jimmy G driving the bus in his stead. What if Jimmy goes 3-1 with 16 touchdowns and 2 interceptions? Then he just became an incredibly valuable QB in a contract year. You can't carry 2 of those, so you either let him play out his contract and leave as a free agent in the spring, or you trade him after Brady returns. Either way, he'll need to be replaced. So, what do you think of the Patriots quarterback controversy here?
I thought we were going to get through the entire pod without any New England references.
we probably should just like cleanse really good, the pod a bit.
No, it's a good. I think it's a good pick. It's a sensible policy for any team to bring in a young quarterback and hopefully trade the previous young quarterback. And like you say, he's going to get the opportunity to do that. Well, we think so in terms of those opening 4 games. And even if he just plays average, he'll surely attract. It was a second round pick, wasn't he? Garoppolo, so he'll hopefully get that back. So good move. But they still need offensive line help.
I think that's just all it is, Neil. New England does this better than anybody. They're going to make him look fantastic in preseason for the next year or two.
Yep.
And then he's going to end up going to Houston when they give up on Brock Osweiler. Or he's going to end up going to a team like San Francisco who needs a quarterback. And they're going to give him a second-round pick for him. And that's all it ended up being. You know, this tells me that Belichick didn't see a lot of value with the players left in the third round. They already addressed Corner, who I thought was a fantastic pick in Cyrus Jones. I love that kid. I think they got a guard before that, so screw it. They still had a handful of picks afterwards. Let's put some money in the savings account. That's all it was to me.
In the same division, we had the Jets taking Christian Hackenberg. So I'll open the floor to you two guys. What's going to be the Jets' depth chart at quarterback come opening week?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Geno will probably start. And I guess they're going to want to – I mean, you don't draft a guy in the middle of the second, you know, especially on a team that has such an uncertainty at that position unless you plan on giving the job to him eventually. I mean, because the Jets are not – I mean, look, they're not the Patriots. They're not going to be able to – for one thing, they don't have a you know, future Hall of Famer, maybe greatest ever 40-year-old quarterback that is going to retire at some point. That's why they need to spend a pick on this high in the position. They have to spend a pick this high in the position because they don't know where they're going at that position. And Hackenberg, they choose a guy in the second round who in our super mock draft fell to the fourth. And I think a lot of people had him going somewhere in the mid rounds. They grab him in the second and he's maybe the least NFL ready guy, at least the guy that people point at as being the guy who needs the most work to sort of retrain. AJ, our Jets super fan, he wrote in on this and said that he's not thrilled with the Hackenberg pick, but he sees the team's rationale. For the first time in forever, it seems like we have cohesion between the GM and coach. Player development is going to be key, as we took a lot of projection guys like Lee, Hackenberg, and Burris. Unlike past regimes, I trust this one to develop these guys, especially because we're not going to have to play big roles right away. And so, you know, if you're a super fan for a 10-6 team that lost, you know, that missed out on the playoffs last year, and you didn't re-sign your quarterback, all you have is blind faith in the GM and coach seeming to not hate each other for the first time in a while. Woohoo!
You know, I'm trying to keep a lot of my opinion to myself. I think I rubbed our superfan break, the Steelers superfan, the wrong way during the draft because I don't see it. I don't see what everybody else is seeing with Hackenberg. I see somebody who's, frankly, he's just broken. He stares down the blitz. I flipped back and forth to ESPN or and NFL Network, but they kind of showed a highlight reel and then his low light reel. And the kid is sailing three routes 10 yards over the receiver's head. It's literally the only time in the game where you can just turn, look at your uncovered receiver, and toss the ball 10 yards. And when you're missing by that much, it's over. I don't see how he's an NFL quarterback at all.
Well, let me stop you right there. I just want to say that I have seen NFL quarterbacks actually, make those throws. It does happen. Those people's name are Matt Castle and Brady Quinn, and I had to watch years of that. So it doesn't mean he's not an NFL quarterback. That's just why I want to correct you right there. It doesn't mean he should be an NFL quarterback. Maybe the difference.
That's true. He's a Jets starting quarterback. I still think they find a way to get something done with Fitzpatrick, but I think what this draft pick does is it makes us wait until they're in training. I think they're going to have to put pads on and realize that Geno Smith's not the answer. We've seen that before. And now they're going to have to see Hackenberg and Petty. I wasn't a big fan of Petty last year either. They need a real quarterback, and Fitzpatrick's not great. I feel like even maybe I've overvalued him on this show before, but he's the only one that I think realistically can get you 9-10 games in an impossible playoff spot.
The reason I asked the question about the Jets quarterbacks is that you would think they will re-sign Fitzpatrick at some point. Then they got Geno Smith. Then they've got Bryce Petty they got last year in the draft. And now they've got Hackenberg. And no team's going to carry four quarterbacks. So which one goes?
I think if you re-sign Fitzpatrick, it's Kennedy Smith. He's making the most money, and he's the one that you truly gave up on already.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the only way it makes any sense. But moving on to things that do make sense, I wanted to give each of you a chance to talk a little bit about your drafts. I mean, Chris, you've sort of already broken down yours, and unfortunately, you're not too happy with yours. But Neil, I actually thought your team did a very good job in the draft for, a bit of a change. There have been definitely some weird Redskins drafts in the past, but I like all three of your top picks. I mean, I think all three of those guys were dudes we've seen, could have been in the first round. But it's more important what you think about it. What do you think, Neil? How did your team do?
Yeah, I've had a chance to calm down a little bit after the shock of the Josh Doctson pick. this is the second year we've had of Scott McLuhan, and we had a terrific draft last year, and it was one of those things, as you rightly say, we don't experience that very often in Washington, but that was a tremendously deep draft. And I've got to have faith that he's done the same thing again. Doctson, he's going to be a player for 2017, I think. I think they'll probably keep Gasson and Jackson for this season. But he looks, he looks the part. I mean, he's as good as any other receiver in this draft, maybe even better than most of them. I think, like Chris, I think I probably have Treadwell rated higher. Sua Cravens, he's one of those picks you kind of think, he sounds great. He's going to come in, he's going to be this sort of hybrid player. And who doesn't like a hybrid player? I mean, we all love hybrid players. And he's going to be sitting there and intercepting passes and helping in the run game. He's going to bring a little bit of fizz and excitement to a rather pedestrian inside linebacker. Although I do notice today they've given him a number for a safety, and they're calling him a safety. So we'll see what happens. But very exciting pick. And Kendall Fuller certainly would have been much higher in the draft if he hadn't had his serious knee injury. And let's hope he recovers from that. I'm a great fan of taking injured players. But, yeah, certainly looks the part. And they say he could be the best of the Fuller brothers. So that's good news for us. We took Matthew Ioannidis in the fifth round after trading away our fourth-round pick. A bit late, I thought. I think the one concern I would have as a Washington fan would be that we didn't address the defensive line until the fifth round. I think I'm not as excited about our rotation there as the coaches seem to be. And, of course, I'm certainly right, and the coaches are no doubt wrong. In the sixth round, Scott McLuhan obviously got sight of my mock draft on Next Fan Up because he took the same quarterback as I did. So a good pick there, Scott. Well done, if you're listening. We took Nate Sudfield, the quarterback, and big guy, huge guy, but he'll come in as the number three quarterback behind Captain Kirk and McCoy. Very happy with that. As I mentioned just moments ago, I think it's great to take a quarterback in every draft just to keep developing them. In the seventh round, we took two interesting players. Real leader in Stephen Daniels, a linebacker. He'll be a special teams player to start with, but the team, there's a lot of buzz around him already that he could be a real steal in this draft, so fingers crossed he will be that. And then we took the fastest running back at the combine in Keith Marshall. And again, we probably should have addressed running back earlier on because we only really have Matt Jones at running back. But this guy's fast. He's also coming off an injury, hitting an ACL in 2013. But yeah, I like his speed, and let's see if he can do something. He might be a good pickup. But also, apart from the running back position and the defensive line, where I thought we could have picked earlier, otherwise I'm really happy with the draft. And as you said, Nick, the first three picks, I think, will all contribute this season.
The one that I found really interesting there, the Stuart Cravens pick, one of the things that I noticed with watching the past couple of years is it seems like as soon as Keenan Robinson, who is now with the Giants, so that should be good for at least, 3 pounds from him, as soon as Keenan Robinson would start to figure it out and started being that athletic linebacker that he should have been coming out of college, he'd get hurt. So Sue Cravens is somebody who hopefully is a little more reliable and durable and is able to come in and fill that spot. I love the kid. We talked about it at night before. And the idea of Marshall with Crowder and Deshaun Jackson on the field, that's a lot of danger speed. And Reed at tight end, that's a lot of speed that your division's going to have a hard time keeping up with.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good point regarding the speed. And, Keenan Robinson was a very promising player. But like you say, I think two straight seasons he had quite serious injuries. And, we haven't really replaced him. We've had a couple of real journeymen at inside linebacker. So let's see what Cravens does. But he's, like I said before, he's one of those players who just gives you a little bit of a wow factor from the draft. And seems like somebody we can really use.
Good stuff. Well, and we touched upon what my team did, and I just wanted to give a bit more of my thoughts on them. I also think that the Chiefs had a pretty good draft. They started it off well by pulling off the trade that was almost the exact same trade that I did in the Superfan Super Mock draft, where in our version of all of this, the Cowboys traded up to my spot to grab Paxton Lynch. That didn't happen in the real draft because Lynch went to the Broncos and trade up a couple of picks before. So instead, it was the 49ers that traded up to number 28, the Chiefs spot. And just like, I got out of the Cowboys, negotiated for their high fourth, a sixth in exchange for our first and our seventh. And that's exactly what the Chiefs got from the 49ers. It was just a couple of spots further back in the second. And in the second, I there were still some good cornerbacks on the board, but they ended up going with the total value pick and grabbing defensive tackle Chris Jones out of Mississippi State. For those who don't watch college, he may be most famous for his rather unfortunate wardrobe malfunction during the combine. But if you look at this guy's tape, it's nuts. I hadn't really looked at him because in mocks, he was always going in the top 15 or 20. And I didn't feel like the Chiefs were likely to grab a D tackle with their first pick. But at number 37th overall, he was just great value. And I think it makes sense. He's played every position on the line. He's got the size for the 3-4 at 310 pounds, 6'6". And this is a very John Dorsey move as well, where it puts pressure, or at least gives us leverage in that Dontari Poe is in a contract year. And so he's the big guy we have to repay next year. And so we have what would seem to be a high quality option to replace him if we can't get that contract done. Meanwhile, the biggest knock against him was just a bit of inconsistent effort or production. It's not really clear what, but either way, he would sort of disappear at times. But that's also why I think it actually will work well for the Chiefs, because we have three really solid starters along the line. And so he's going to be rotating in and out here and there. And so he's going to be coming in fresh at and he can come in at all three positions. So that's going to be fun. So then we traded back again at the back of the second, as we mentioned before, so that Tampa Bay could get their kicker, and Tampa Bay gave us, you know, another high fourth. And so with the Tampa Bay's third pick that we moved back to, we got Kivire Russell, who, I mean, he's part of a theme, actually, of the Chiefs. The Chiefs ended up picking, in the end, three cornerbacks, all of which, and actually three cornerbacks and a couple of wide receivers. And what sort of united all of them is that they were guys who sort of fell that were, they were meant to be value picks, but they all fell because either they were injured one year or they had some red flags. And this is a front office that in the past had always really avoided players with particularly character red flags. I mean, it was well known that Andy Reid really likes players that came from two-parent households. He's, you know, he's a BYU guy, so he likes guys that went through that school. And obviously, it's a, you know, it's a fairly conservative place, Brigham Young University. And but, you know, we ended up with Kivire Russell, who actually was missed an entire season with an academic suspension at some point, but he played well otherwise. We got the other cornerback was Eric Murray out of Minnesota, who also he had a really down 2015, I think, was the issue with him. And the third cornerback, towards the end of the sixth round, was actually probably my favorite, DJ White out of Georgia Tech. I mean, he has the physical skills, and I think he has better instincts than anybody else. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it's weird that the third cornerback we took ended up being my favorite, but in terms of his tape, I like him the best. We also got Dottie Nicholas, who I picked in the super mock at the end of the sixth, who's a great, I mean, he's going to be a situational pass rusher, but that's fine with a sixth round pick. And in terms of the wide receivers, though, that's where it gets a little bit hairy for me. In the fourth round, we grabbed DeMarcus Robinson, who was suspended not once, not twice, not three times in Florida, but four times. But he showed, you know, I mean, a lot of ability down there. And so, you know, fine, we'll throw him in. And with the other wide receiver we picked up was Tyreek Hill, who, you know, he ended up with West Alabama, but he was dismissed from Oklahoma State after pleading guilty to a really, really ugly domestic violence incident, where he basically, I mean, he's still on probation for beating up his pregnant girlfriend, which at least at the time he had zero remorse for. So he's the one guy that has been the really controversial pick that's been blowing up Chiefs Twitter. And that I can say the only thing that I'm happy about him being in the league at all is that I look forward to seeing him get hit. But he was a dynamic returner for them and did some snaps at running back and wide receiver. So I think he was sort of this cheap option for them for the sort of DeAnthony Thomas, Dexter McCluster sort of type. But man, I really don't want to have to be rooting for this guy. I hope he washes out. Either way, I thought it was interesting what the Chiefs did, realizing that they lost the third round pick, trade back a couple of times, get a bunch of picks so that you can kind of go a scattershot approach at the positions of need, throw a bunch of picks there, all guys that maybe have a bit of hair on them in terms of their value or in terms of red flags and things like that that caused them to drop. And at least some of them are going to become good. Some of them are going to become special teamers. Some of them won't be on the squad, but that's the case with everybody. I wouldn't be surprised if at least one of these cornerbacks gets moved to safety. They all have the same sort of press man, like really good open field tackler and the run game sort of skills that I think would make them all very good safeties if they don't work out as corners. So that's the Chiefs.
Nick, I guess like most fans of the draft process, you kind of pick up one or two names throughout the process and down the line, you kind of always look out for them, even though they're not on your team. And one of my names there was Kevin Hogan, and you guys got him. What's the plans for Kevin?
Well, he joins. I wasn't high on the idea of the Chiefs grabbing a quarterback unless they picked up more picks and used a late one on him. And they did. That's exactly what they did. I mean, the Chiefs apparently, like I mentioned before, were trying to maybe find a way to get Paxton Lynch. But for Hogan, you know, in terms of the Chiefs quarterback depth right now, they have Aaron Murray, who is a great quarterback at Georgia, but had an ACL. And so we grabbed him in, the fourth a year or two ago. And we also have Tyler Bray, who tore it up in Tennessee. And both of those are developmental guys that have, you know, but we've only really seen them in preseason. And our normal backup, Chase Daniel, is now a Philadelphia Eagle and maybe the starter in that crazy situation there. So, I mean, they're bringing one more guy. It'll be interesting, though, because having three developmental quarterbacks behind a guy who you know who he is in terms of Alex Smith, I mean, I have no idea who's going to shake out of there. What I do like in Hogan is I feel like his ceiling might be as an NFL starter, but he seems to have the smarts and the consistency to be able to get there. And so I think he's a safe pick for, you know, for quarterback depth, but I wouldn't expect to see him competing for Alex Smith's job.
One thing that I would like to just bring up about your draft is, you know, we discussed this when we did the Superfan mock draft and you took Teddy Nicholas. Kansas City's the perfect fit for him. That kid is absolutely explosive off the line. You've got an injury with Justin Houston, you know, and D Ford is somebody who hopefully pans out, but the verdict's still out for him. You know, we need to see him as a starter before we can say anything. And Tom Bahalini's not getting any younger. But the potential that you could end up losing Justin Houston, Tom Bahalini, and still have two dynamic pass rushers coming up in Ford and Nicholas is insane. An absolute steal. I think in the sixth round you guys got him. It's fantastic. And that kid Murphy from Minnesota, is also another steal. He had a really good draft.
Yeah, and I'd probably give it like a B+. I mean, but it's yet to be seen because I feel like there's nobody here where it's like, knock it out of the park. This guy's a day one starter. We know this guy's going to be great forever. It's a lot of depth guys and a lot of really intriguing prospects. But I like the way that they realized if we lost our third round pick, let's just move back as much as we can and really fill up our positions of need with a lot of bodies that we were high on the upside on. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
I was just going to say, along with Prince Charles Iwoa, who has a great name, I do love the thought of Nicholas sacking Derek Carr next season and the Chiefs fans all shouting, "Who's the daddy? Who's the daddy?"
Well, what you're mostly hearing is me shouting that into Monty's face. But yes, I am looking forward to that. Yeah, I mean, one pick I didn't mention is, you know, I picked Cody Whitehair first in our super mock draft because I think we really need one more dependable piece in at the guard spot, and we did grab one in the fourth round with one of our three fourth rounders in Parker Ehinger out of Cincinnati, who's a guy who seems like apparently has all like the physical ability, but seemed to underperform based on his physical, this is bulk and his strength. So we'll see how that turns out. I mean, I'm glad they tossed one more guy in there for depth, but I think I've been rambling quite a bit enough here on the Chiefs. The good news is for you folks out there is that our up and down coverage of the draft is only going to continue. You're going to be hearing from a whole other slate of super fans. Actually, it sounds like twice this week. And that Andrew, I think, wants to do a show, and given how much we bashed his Jets, I have a feeling he's going to have some choice words for us. And you're always going to have a show on Thursday with the great Pod Vader and the usual crew, which Neil is really sort of on loaner from the Thursday show for us here. We really appreciate him tuning in, especially late in Scotland time. And like I said, all of these long breakdowns of the draft and reactions from our fans, which we do have fans of all 32 teams, they're going to be on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching Next Fan Up in the search bar on Facebook. You can also find all of our past podcasts and interact with the site at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. We'd also really like for you to rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. That's really a good way for us to get bumped up and get more people to see our show. And write us in if you have any comments or questions or maybe you even want to vie to become one of our super fans. Our email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. And we're constantly putting stuff out on Twitter, and you can find most of us on Twitter as well. Our show page is NFU Podcast on Twitter, and you can find me directly for any reviews, constructive or deconstructive criticism, at Clayton Nicholas. And what about you, Chris? Where can people bring their reassuring words about how great the Saints draft was?
You can find me at Dat Patron Saint, D-A-T Patron Saint, on Twitter, and we're all quite over active on our Facebook page, so feel free to let me know how wrong I am. And I would like to take the moment also to thank Neil for slumming it with us on Sundays. I know he's always typically big time with us on Thursday with the Pod Vader crew, so it's fun to get one of those Thursday guys over here and I have to fill the spot with Monty. Well, once we get Monty on here on Sundays, it just becomes the bickering between Nick and him. So thank you again.
No problem. I do feel a little bit dirty. I think I'm going to go have to go and have a shower. But
oh, come on. You're used to getting like double barrels of Patriot talk on Thursday's show.
This is a safe place. If you feel out of place.
No, you can just tell me some. Just make some very tenuous link towards the Deflate Gate, and I'll feel right at home.
Yes. Well, if someone would also like to ramble on towards you in your general direction about the Deflate Gate, where would be the best way for our fans to do that, Neil?
They can hit me up on Twitter. It's NeilSalmon71, and I'll also take salmon fishing questions.
Hence the name. All right. Well, this has been Next Fan Up, and there you have it.